With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Good Job, where we interview inspiring people from the music industry. We follow their journey from their very worst job to present day and find out what makes them them. That beautiful roar is by Harish Sivarama Krishnan from Agam. Now, I came across him at first when someone asked me to react to him on my channel, and he wowed me with this beautiful, intricate ornamentation and a lovely tone. And then I did a little bit of research into him, and I found that he had done some TED Talks, and I loved his philosophy on life.
I am a believer in sticking around, hanging in there and making sure that you're doing the right set of things and not egoistically doing things that you think are right. There's a subtle difference.
In this episode, we chat about finding balance between viability and creativity when creating music, how he combined prog rock and South Indian classical music, and the pros and cons of introspection. All right, so we start the podcast the same way every time. What was your very worst job?
Doing sales. I was quick enough to understand that maybe while I could do sales, it's not something that I'm enjoying in the true sense of having to do that as a day job. I could do anything. I'm somebody that is happy to do whatever that pays, but sales is something that I just thought I should not try doing again if I had a choice. So yeah, being a salesman wasn't fun.
What point in your life was that? And could you imagine where you are now?
So the first time I did it because it was my job and I was learning and I was just learning the ropes of what it means to do software sales. It was fun at that point in time because you're learning and you're understanding what is the rules of engagement and how do you go about it and what success means to you. I don't mind that time too much, but the second and third stints that I had kind of were more stressful and probably there were higher degree of expectations from me because it was not doing for the first time. In retrospect, Beth, to be honest, I do not think where I could be at any point in time in my life. So when I retrospect, I just realized I didn't have a plan. I just did what I had to do because, like, you know, it's an interesting... I had a pretty interesting growing up in this country, and I have done a whole variety of things, connected, unconnected.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did your interest in music start?
Both my parents kind of got me into this. My mom and dad, I think, my dad is a musician. My grandfather from my dad's side, he was a musician himself, and I have a whole bunch of people who were traditional South Indian classical musicians in my family. And my mom, on the other hand, was very persistent and very very sure that she had to get me into some form of art early in my life. So I was started with lessons pretty early. I started lessons at the age of 4.5 or maybe 5, I don't remember, like very, very early, when I probably did not know what this could all mean or what is it that I'm learning. That's how it started. But in retrospect, I'm super grateful. It's a pretty early age to start, and it helps you learn your art in a way that it puts you at a place of real comfort when you're slightly older. So that's how it started. I have been practicing from then, and I formally took lessons until the age of 24, maybe 25, till that point, about 21 years. I was fairly regular in taking lessons and learning it. And once I started working, that's when I had to find other ways. And of course, then YouTube happened, and then you have a lot of other ways to learn right now. So
as a vocal coach, I am obviously really aware of what happens in a singing lesson within Western styles. But what happens within a singing lesson in South Indian lessons? What would be like a general lesson? And what things would you be looking for in a voice?
So we have two large classical music styles in the Indian subcontinental region, which includes India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, if you consider that one belt. We have two styles of classical music. One is the North Indian classical music and the South Indian classical music. The North Indian classical music is a little more closer to the Western style of learning, which is very pitch oriented. It's more driven by your ability to hold a note. It's about note clarity and precision and hitting your note right. And also the training is far more staccato because it's taught on a harmonium. While South Indian classical music is a little more lyrical and far more structured. So the training in South Indian classical music, Carnatic as we call it, is more compositional in nature. You learn songs, and the way you learn your art is by the medium of these compositions that are pre-created. That way, these are very fixed structure compositions that you learn. And through the years after you learn these compositions, your imagination sort of grows and you start applying improvisations and your ornamentation around those compositions starts slowly evolving. So the good part is that it's a very rigorous, highly disciplined training methodology that you have in South Indian classical music. The downsides, if you may, the focus on dynamics is low. The focus on precision of pitching is comparatively lesser. And the focus on vocal delivery itself is not as great as probably the Western or the North Indian classical musical styles, where a lot of focus is given to your use of your voice box to actually emote. So here it's a pretty rigid structured musical structure where your ability to deliver to the writing is far more important than the nuances of how you're using your voice to emote. But honestly, through the years, Carnatic music has evolved so much, and all the modern practitioners of the art, when I say modern people from the last 100 years, have imbibed musical constructs from the Western classical music and other forms of music. So we have gotten a lot different than what the pedagogy kind of taught us. So a standard lesson is learning these exercises and learning a composition. So you learn a few exercises, apply them, learn a few more, and you learn scales and modes, of course, like we call them ragas in our system. So,
and you combine South Indian music with prog rock, which are really different genres. How did that come about, and how did you find that at first?
I got to be honest here. It's like an absolute chance accident. I don't think it was premeditated. I think if I remember, I was like probably 19. That's when like 2 to 3 bands happened to my life, and those bands have had a profound impact on me as a musician. They continue to have. The first band that happened to me was Rush, very quickly followed by Dream Theater, and somewhere through the line, Iron Maiden. And a little later through my life, bands like Snarky Puppy, Opeth, Tool, a lot of them happened like at different phases in my life, but a profound influence has been Dream Theater. So I lived on Dream Theater records for probably 3 years in a row. Like I was just listening to them, writing them down. I was breaking down parts, renotating them, learning them in a way that I could sing them. So progressive metal music just became a part of my musical vocabulary because I was so deeply inspired by the way they wrote their music, both Rush and Dream Theater for that matter. At that point in time, what they were doing was quite extraordinary. They're still pretty extraordinary, but it really hit me at that point in time. It kind of stayed at the back of my mind, I guess. And when I started writing my own music, I met my friends, Praveen, that plays guitar with me, and Swami, who plays keyboards in my band. Interestingly, they had pretty similar musical taste. They're from a different era. Like Praveen is a lot younger to me. He's almost like 10 years younger to me. Swami's like 8 years older to me. But we three kind of hit it off in a way that we had very similar musical interests. And the last one is Carnatic music has a lot of constructs that progressive rock music uses, like polyrhythms, like, you know, pitch and modal shifts, like mixed meter. These are things that we have as constructs in Carnatic music. So I was fascinated. Wow, two really different styles of music, which probably originated from two different parts of the world, have so much commonality. So we started doing the commonalities together to try and see if it could produce a new sound. Truth be said, 9 out of 10 of them didn't make sense because you require a certain degree of understanding to combine those styles. But that 1 out of 10 did make sense. That's how my band was formed. Like, okay, so if you tried really hard, you can make 1 out of 10 really work. So that's the journey. And through the years, I think our understanding has improved on both the styles of music, because that's how you age yourself as a musician. For me, the hardest part has been to learn progressive rock music deeply, which I'm continuing to learn. I don't think I know everything and have all the answers. Same thing with Indian classical music. I'm trying to learn both of them deeply. And with that learning comes some innate understanding of these two styles and how you can bring them together in organic, well-melded ways. And that's what I'm trying to do with my band and with the art that we create. The challenge has been to invest that time, because that's painstaking. It's not natural, because we always want to create. We don't have the patience to sometimes just go in, like, shut yourself up in the studio and think and understand. So that has been my learning best.
And your initial training was in engineering, which is really far away from music. And you have gone back and forth between engineering and music. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
There's a joke that in South India, most of the men actually turn out to be either engineers or doctors, because we don't know better. And if you don't become that, you probably become a lawyer. And then there is a downward pecking order of, and musician somehow does not feature pretty high in that list for anybody who's growing up in a middle-class household in India. So I studied engineering because I didn't know better. I wouldn't think that I was like good at it, or I had great aptitude to engineering, or like this is what I wanted to do. Till today, I don't think that's how I looked at my education at all. I was just told that maybe this is a good thing, and it gets you jobs, and it's like good, it gives you stability. That's how I ended up doing engineering, and truth be said, it quickly turned out that I was not great at it. So I turned out to be the regular guy at an engineering school, just trying pretty hard to make the C's and at best B's and the regular grades, and trying to keep the degree, undergraduate degree, going. So that's what happened at my engineering. But then the good part is I started working in the software industry. That's also a chance accident, because that was the kind of time that I graduated. Surprisingly for me, I like that bit of my life really well. So I turned out to be a good engineer from a computer's standpoint. And I have built most of my career doing that, and I still enjoy doing that. I still work. A lot of people don't know that I'm not a full-time musician still. I still work, and I enjoy that side of my life, which is more due to the fact that I ended up in that industry and started learning the ropes and became a person that's conditioned to work there. So I have always been a musician. I was trained in music. My dad is a musician. My family had a whole bunch of musicians. So I have stayed a musician all the time, but it never really appeared to be a career that you can pursue. Truth be said, even today, it's a little bit of it's a little steep to think that you could build a career out of being an independent musician in India.
And how much of that is choice, and how much of that is because that is required of musicians?
I like certain aspects of being in a job like what I have. One of that is the perceived sense of financial stability. It's a myth. In reality, nothing is really stable, and you don't really know what tomorrow is going to be like. But there is a certain degree of perceived stability and predictability that comes from being in a job versus being a full-time musician. I think my creativity is heavily dependent on my state of mind of being secure, feeling stable, feeling at peace at my mind. And through the years, I've just learned that if my mind is not at the right place, I find it really hard to make music. So for me, my ability to pursue art or make music is hugely dependent on whether the bank account is ringing on the first day of the month. So I'm sort of wired like that. So you could call that compulsion, but for me, it's a good balance that I have, that I don't pay my bills necessarily with the art that I create, which sort of gives me the ability to say no, which I think is a huge privilege for an artist. But if you're like really making money out of your art, oftentimes you don't have the liberty or privilege to say no to a lot of things. I do, because I don't, my life and my family doesn't depend on my earnings as an artist. So that gives me a lot of power, if you may, to create art the way I like.
I've seen that you are a big advocate for multitasking, and I'm sure a lot of people expect musicians just to work on music. And I find that really, really interesting about you, that you're quite happy to do lots of different things and actually say it's a good thing. So what are your thoughts on that?
I am a creative person, but I also sort of introspect and self-evaluate how am I doing as a creative person every passing day. Like, you know, you wake up a Monday morning and you're wondering, like, you know, what am I doing today? Am I writing a song? Am I making a new tune? Or am I practicing? Or is it something that I'm listening to? Every day is different, and it brings you a different perspective. So sometimes I just realize in a 30-day month, maybe it's about 9-10 days that I'm really doing justice to my existence as an artist, and the remaining 20 days is either unproductive or I'm actually good at things that are not art on those days. Like, for instance, like, you know, I could just really do up my house, like, you know, and not really get into the studio on a non-creative day. Like, and I just know, you wake up in the morning, you know, right, that today is going to be a great day because you're brimming with ideas and you just want to hit the studio and do some stuff, do some recordings. And you know that day is going to be great. Some days you definitely know by like 10 a.m. that, hey, look, it's not working out today. I think my mind is not working right. So I just think that it is a little bit of a stretch for a person like me to do only one thing. So it's less multitasking, more about looking at the different things that you can do as a human being. I think every living person has more than one ability, sometimes more than two, sometimes more than five. We all fall into the fixation that there's only one thing that we can do really well, and we kind of overtly focus on that one thing, and frustration mounts because you know that you have invested, it's not paying off, it's not working, the work that you've created is not really transcending the kind of quality that you want to push forward. So I'm just trying to keep myself occupied on 2 to 3 different things that I think I can do, so that my overall satisfaction as an individual on a particular day is higher than being frustrated about not able to do something that I signed up for because that day turned out to be a not so good day.
Do you think the skills that you've learned from engineering and your other work, do you think, and music, do you think they help each other in any way?
To me, yes. Every analytical, logical science kind of brings a certain degree of discipline in you. It brings out the inquisitiveness or truth seeking, if you may. Because engineering is a very empirical science. You cannot say that I felt so, because most of the science requires you to find reasons as to why you feel a particular way. So that's something which I learned being an engineer, working in the engineering trade for so long, that you need to sometimes ask the right questions and some degree of truth searching, which helps me bring that discipline into my creative process. And the second one is I have built and sold startups in my life. And one thing that I learned from running a company or like doing something which is intrinsically like running a business, it teaches you how to leverage your art, how to take it to people, and how to keep it viable. Sometimes art can be a very selfishly self-fulfilling pursuit for a lot of people, like, you know, when you don't really understand whether it is touching or reaching anyone at all, which is okay. I guess some people are very happy living like that, where they're not really affected by how it is touching others, as long as inwardly they're happy. For me, I like the light and sound, and I like the fanfare. I like the fact that there is a popularity. I like the fact that you're commercially viable. I like the fact that you have show bookings through the year. I think some of these are beyond just being an artist. There are more things that you need to do to make sure that doing some degree of self-propagation, some degree of marketing, some degree of being at the right place at the right time, saying the right things, finding the right space. All this I learned not by being an artist. I learned them by being a business person, an engineer, somebody who's from the logical side of the world as opposed to the creative side of the world.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people forget as well about the music industry being a business, and not a lot of artists. You're kind of lucky because you have that logical side to you, but not a lot of artists have that. And perhaps that's when you need someone like a manager who can help guide you. Whereas I guess you have that ability to do that yourself a little bit more because of that part of your personality.
Absolutely. And I think I'm grateful because it's a, like you rightly mentioned, it's a tough industry. Like, you know, it has got the workings of the industry is way more than the ability to produce good art. I think it is, it goes a lot beyond that. So understanding that a little bit helps you. At least that's been my learning.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
All right, the quick fire round. Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Music or lyrics?
Music.
Cats or dogs?
Both, actually, but if I had to pick one, cats.
Creativity or logic?
Creativity.
Plane or train?
A plane.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Sweet treats or savory snacks?
It depends upon... sweets. Okay.
Sweet. City or countryside?
Countryside.
Matching or odd socks?
Odd socks.
Guitar or piano?
Piano.
Friday night in or Friday night out?
Friday night in.
Modern or vintage?
Vintage in a few and modern in a few.
Cool. Black and white or technicolor?
Black and white.
Moose or mouse?
Moose.
Hey, this is the part of the podcast where I give you a fun fact about our guest. Harish and his band Agam combine prog rock and Carnatic music in their own musical style, and most of us in the West are familiar with the bands that define the prog rock genre, such as Pink Floyd and Dream Theater. But what is Carnatic music? It is one of two main subgenres of Indian classical music and is primarily based in the south of India. The other subgenre is called Hindustani, and it has emerged as distinctly different because of Islamic and Persian influences in northern India. The main influence on Carnatic music is singing. Even the instruments are meant to be played in a sung style. And the difference from Hindustani music is that it is based around composition, although it does have a lot of scope for improvisation. What I find particularly beautiful about Carnatic music is that every time it's performed, it's different. And it combines the vision of the composer as well as the interpretation of the artist through improvisation. Do you believe more in fate or do you believe more in choice?
I can only be anecdotal about luck. So if I have to be anecdotal about it, I would accept that, yes, there is something called luck, because I have probably experienced instances that I would call manifestation of luck. But I do believe that more than luck, it's about applying your mind, understanding what your strengths and weaknesses are and where does your art fit in. That has through the years helped me to kind of time myself. It has taken me 14 years. I've been singing from 2003, not even 14, like 16 years is what it has taken me to actually break into mainstream. Like, I probably went mainstream in India, like if I can claim so, is probably in 2017-18. It took me that long. And I have been doing the same thing relentlessly over and over. I have probably gotten better, but I'm doing the same thing for all this while. So I think it's about sticking around there, hanging in there, understand that there's going to be a space that's going to open out at some point in time. So you get in there and make yourself heard. And then you do a good job and then you're heard. That's how I see my luck manifesting. But yeah, I am a believer in sticking around, hanging in there and making sure that you're doing the right set of things and not egoistically doing things that you think are right. There's a subtle difference. A lot of people get stuck in doing things that they believe is right. But if it is not making sense to most of the people around you, then you have to recalibrate. I'm from that camp. So if what you're doing isn't really resonating, then probably you need to look inwards. You can't always say that everybody around me is stupid and I'm doing everything right and it's your problem, you don't get what I'm doing. In a very intrinsically capitalist free market society, it's a very hard position to take.
What has been your biggest challenge on your journey?
Self-doubt. I have always hoped for getting to a place where I really think I deserve to be a lot earlier in my life, but that's not the nature of the beast. That's not how this works. So when you believe that you have done your best and you've done really great, and then you realize that the song you wrote is not working at all, you just don't understand what went wrong. Like, you know, you keep asking this question to yourself, I do think this is a great piece of music I wrote. Like, you know, everything in you tells you that this rendition was fantastic, or this piece of music that I wrote is fantastic, but it simply doesn't seem to work. And now it manifests in two different ways. Like, why is this not working? Am I wrong about myself? Is this whole notion of myself that what I created is actually a good piece of music? This self-doubt sort of pushes you significantly behind in time. It happened to me a lot of times. At some point, I was thinking maybe I am the only one thinking that what I'm doing is meaningful. It has happened to me a lot of times. Like, one part of me would say that this is great. I think this is promising. This is fantastic. And then nobody really cares that you played it to. And then you start thinking, but nobody cared. Is it like really that good? Or is it like the people didn't get it? So this self-doubt has sent me back in time a lot of times through my time to come out as a musician and get my music heard. And I was also impatient. I think most of the musicians I know are also impatient because they do see that some people succeed pretty quickly. Like, overnight fame is a real thing. You could just come in today, put up a song on YouTube and it's viral and you have a billion views and you're a star. So it does happen to some people that they just come in and then they become the next best thing. But 9 out of 10 people, it takes a lot longer. So having that patience built into me that I have to stick around, I have to probably keep pushing, keep trying till the point that you get your one chance or you get that one seat on the table to go and do your thing is something which I learned. It has been a challenge. It has been a learning. I am far more grateful and patient right now, Beth. I think my gratitude is significantly higher than my discomfort of not having reached where I wanted to earlier.
How do you balance the difference between being confident in what you're putting out and making sure that you are on the right path? You're putting out something that is going to be viable, I suppose.
Thanks for asking. I think it's an important question. I'm super grateful that you asked it because a lot of musicians, I believe, should be asked this question because it'll help them think deeply about the art that they're creating. I don't know if I know the answer. I only can speak about how I'm going about it. So I keenly observe people because I like it. Not because I have an ulterior intent of wanting to look at people and manipulate them. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I do like to observe very large sections of the society that are coming together to listen to any form of art. It's possible that you understand a certain pattern in the way that perceive the art, perceive a person. So many a time, like, you know, they also have to like the artist, not just the art, especially in live music. In a recorded format, it's okay because there's no personality. Your art is being played off a headphone, and if it's beautiful, you're good. But as a live musician, I have learned that the people gotta like you as an individual, and what do you stand for, what do you come across as, and how do you speak, and how do you conduct yourself. Like, And every human is different. Some people can completely be snobbish and still get away with it because that's their personality. People accept that. Some people are far more understated in terms of how they are. So who you are matters. So for me, viability is a function of you as an individual as well as your art. You cannot separate that from each other. So you can't be a person that acts like he doesn't care and still produce great music and still expect people to come after you when your natural personality or reaction is like, okay, here is some music. It's up to you guys to like it or not. I'm just going to do my stuff. It's okay. Some people can get away with that because their stuff is that good. But most of us are creating music, which are hits and misses. Like, you know, you do 10 pieces of work, 5 of them going to work, 5 of them are not going to work. So your job is to make at least 7 of them to work at least to some degree so that you stay viable. Now, you can't be a guy that makes one hit every 2 years and still expect to have shows throughout the year. So you have to understand the pulse of who you are presenting this art to. And if you don't understand them deeply, then it becomes a very self-fulfilling pursuit. No harm in it. But if you have chosen the route of being only self-fulfilling with your art, then you can't really complain that it is not getting mainstream success. So you have to understand that mainstream success is also a function of, like you very eloquently point out, it's a function of viability. I, as an individual, am happy if my audience is happy. If somebody is paying me $20 to come and watch my show, I want him to go back entertained. For me, that's pretty critical. So if I'm not putting out stuff there that he considers innately valuable, then I'm not very successful. So that's my position.
I guess a lot of artists don't think so much about their audience. A lot of artists will get quite wound up in making a music for themselves, which there is a place for that. But also at the end of the day, it is there for other people.
More than the money, I guess, people give you time. Mm. And that's like really valuable because in today's time, like I could just be Netflixing and not go to a concert. It's like super comfortable sitting at my couch and probably eating comfort food and watch like a really nicely produced show. But I decided to take myself out, drive through the traffic, go into a venue, stand and sweat. There has to be purpose for that. So if I'm not valuing that purpose that somebody is doing, then it's a little hard in my opinion. So I have that position.
What has been your greatest accomplishment so far?
I feel happy about some things that I've been able to do. Let me put it that way rather than masquerading it as a huge accomplishment because it then becomes, inwardly, it becomes problematic for me that I'll have to then reevaluate whether it really is. In India, specifically in the south of the country, it's really hard to break into any form of mainstream without being present in the movie industry. So here the movie industry sort of takes 80% of the space and the remaining 20% that you have is occupied by classical music, folk music, non-film music, band music, rock, metal, rap, R&B, EDM. The pie is so small that 80% of the pie is occupied by the might of the film industry. All of you are aware of Bollywood, but what's not very clear is that India has several other very powerful movie industries. Like South India has a very different movie industry, which is not Bollywood, which is probably equally as popular because our languages are different and our ethos and culture is very different from what Bollywood sort of stands for. So the biggest joy I have is that I am a rank outsider in the South Indian music industry. I have zero presence in the film industry. I'm an independent musician, always functioned like that. I'm not backed by a label. All my releases, all my band's releases have been all independent. We have not really been supported by any large brand until now. But we ended up being one of the more respected independent acts from the country. And we ended up being MTV's Artist of the Year for 2013. We were on Coke Studio. We pretty much went to places where typically musicians with some sort of industry backing would have better chances of success at. So we have been able to go to places purely on the merit of sticking to our narrative, creating honest music and of course, a shot of luck here and there and a shot of good timing here and there.
Yeah. For sure. If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one quality or ability, what would it be?
I have two wishes. One is that I could have better hearing. I have compromised hearing on 1 ear, which is predominantly because the time that I spent with pretty loud instruments. So my left ear doesn't work as good as it should, but I think it's still holding up because I took appropriate care at the right point to make sure that it was not deteriorating. But I really would like my hearing to go back to what it used to be. It's not a new power, but it's a power that I lost. So the other superpower I want is to have great pitching no matter what.
I understand that one.
Leave the other one. I could really have this one. I think I can handle with the hearing. I think if somebody gave this, I would take it totally.
So you seem like someone who likes to introspect quite a lot. How important has that been for your life and your music and your career?
Good and bad. I think introspection helps you to not make the same mistake twice, I guess. So you make a new mistake every day, which is okay, I guess. But you don't do the same thing again because you're deeply introspecting what you did and what's probably right and what probably is not. But introspection also reduces your canvas because you're only thinking on the merit of what is empirically available, what has already happened in your life, which kind of sometimes makes you not aware of what stands in front of you or what lies ahead of you, because you are always thinking how some of this would apply to your prior experiences. So sometimes being too introspective, I believe, has made me conservative, which is not a great feeling, because every time you want to do something, but then something in you tells me that, oh, look, Harish, you may not want to do that because the last time you did something similar, XYZ, ABC happened. So it works both ways. So what I've realized is to let go after introspecting. Earlier, I used to hold on to them a lot. The introspection used to control my actions for the future pretty heavily. I think I've stopped that. I introspect and I'm slowly learning to let go. Like, okay, I'm aware of that, but I'm going to try this. So that is slowly allowing me to break out into zones that I've not been before without being held hostage by my own thoughts of what could go wrong.
And our final question, if you had one piece of advice for people who want to enter the music industry, what would it be?
The first thing that I would say, like probably it's a largely unpopular opinion. I'll start with that. So the first thing to know when you're entering the music industry is to acknowledge and recognize that it is an industry. And industries have rules of industries. Industries work on simple principles of commercial and non-commercial viability. So basically, anybody who is entering need to understand that it's not charity. It is not a corporate social responsibility cause that somebody is putting up together for you that you can come and present your art. It is an industry that has been created with the intent of making money for all parties. So the understanding that it is an industry driven by profit and loss is a great start point for artists if they choose to enter the industry. You can always remain an underground musician. That's fine. Then you're not in the industry. You're happy with whatever little you have. But you're entering the industry. I think it's important to know that it is similar to any other industry in the world where rules of economics apply, profit and loss criteria apply, and viability applies. That's the first thing I want to say. It's a very unbecoming statement for an artist to say as their opening line, but I'm choosing to say that because that's been my learning. The other aspect is to stay sincere, stay honest to your pursuit, try not to be like anybody else, or try not to emulate somebody else's success because their success came from a whole set of different metrics, whole set of different heuristics that person applied to get to where he is. And his journey is different from your journey. Her journey is different from your journey. So no two journeys are alike. So stay focused on your journey and take the paths that will take you to your destination most appropriate to you. Try not to take journey paths that somebody else took because it turned out to be successful for them. So sticking to your narrative is very important. Third one is, I mentioned, stay patient, stay focused. It may happen today, it might happen 5 years later, but if you're going to stick around and try, it's going to happen. At some point in time, it's going to happen. It's about how long you can hang around and stay positive. I myself said it's hard, but you got to do that. The last one is, whatever it is, be honest to your art. Even if you're creating it for your audience, be honest to that pursuit. Just because there's a commercial intent behind it, don't become like a factory. Like, you know, that would be terrible. Then you stop being an artist. Like, don't create an assembly line of tunes just because there are going to be takers for what you're doing today. That's not going to last you. So that's it, man. I guess, like, you know, everybody has their small little journey that they have to embark upon and face the challenges. And eventually, I guess everybody will get there. It's only a question about when and how much and at what point in time. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting
Likewise.
To me today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye. Big thanks to Harish. If you want to check out Agam's music, I totally suggest it. It's absolutely beautiful, and you can find that on YouTube and Spotify. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your podcast app of choice. It really helps us share these podcast episodes with more people. If you'd like to support the podcast or get early access to episodes, head over to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/BethRoars. And if you'd like to send us some feedback, please do at goodjob@BethRoars.com. Once again, massive thanks to Harish, to James and Kazra at One Fine Play for the initial edits, to Tom Court, my co-producer, for working so hard on these, and to you guys for listening. See you in the next one. Bye.
Good job. Rawr.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.